that group, see the name for that.
Mike, does the city set, so...
It's Michael Summer, and I'm the acting chairman right now. And I will bring this meeting of the Ocala Police Officer Retired Board of Trustees meeting to order at 1:05 PM. Today's date is 8/9/2016. Just for purposes of the tape, we'll go around the room and introduce ourselves. Like I said, I'm Mike Summer, acting chairman.
Steve Cuffey, Ocala Police Department.
Doug Shively, board member.
Larry Cole, investment consultant.
Lee Deaner, attorney.
Mindy Stewart, Ocala Police Department, observer.
Dale Adams, planning administrator.
Jessica Bellman, mission specialist.
Okay, first order of business is confirming the results of the recent trustee election.
A trustee election was held at the police department on, from July 19th to July 21st. And we did it according to the normal procedure, announcing the election at least a week ahead of time, posting notices, having a ballot box in the front lobby of the PD where the desk officers sit. And ballots were counted on the evening of the 21st. And of 134, I believe, eligible to vote, we only had 19 votes cast, which is an all-time low, I believe. Steve Cuffey received 15 votes and David Rodriguez received 4, so thereby Steve is elected to the board. We just need a motion and second to confirm the results of the election.
I'll move we confirm the results.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Welcome to the board.
Steve, how do you spell your last name?
C-U-P-P-Y.
Alright, next order of business.
You won in a landslide, sounds like.
Yeah, overwhelming some of our presidential nominees should have hired me as a consultant. Yeah, that is done.
Well, I'm personally kind of shocked at the apathy. Especially after, after what we went through last year with negotiating the contract and everything. But there was renegotiation of the police officer contract at the same time for lieutenants down, and it got the same, pretty much the same turnout to vote on a wage package over 3 years.
Mike, sounds like you said it, just apathy, right?
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but. All right, the next order of business is to select a chairman or secretary. Historically, it's always been the two elected police officers because Dale can find us quickly to get things signed.
Do you have a preference for your office? Or?
It doesn't matter, but
I'll nominate Mike for the chairman and Steve for the secretary.
Who seconds that?
You can second.
I'll second it. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
3-0.
Steve, secretary is really the
job
that requires the most attention, time, and yeah.
Give it to the new guy. Go ahead, Eddie.
They're pretty much equal because Dan's going to find whoever he can find when he meets up aside. You'll get these phone calls. Are you in the building? Public input and comment. Any? Just happy to be here. Alright, next item of business, review of the minutes of the prior meeting from May 9th, 2016.
Accept them in.
Second.
All right. Do we have a motion and a second? Doug?
No.
Any further discussion? All in favor of accepting minutes from the May 9th meeting?
Aye.
Aye. There you go. All right, drop benefits.
Drop retirement benefits for John Bianco, who elected to go into the drop on May 1st. After 25 years of service. And he elected to take a payment for his lifetime with 100% continued to a joint annuity with no lump sum. And the monthly amount would be $5,532.44.
I move we approve the drop benefits for Bianca.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Welcome to the drop, John.
Yeah, anybody who's within 5 years of normal retirement still goes under the old plan.
Yeah, that's good.
But we've got quite a few people who when they retire, when they go on the drop, they'll still be under the old plan.
That's good.
Yeah, there's about 20 of them.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I've got 22.
Yeah, we've come in. We've all seen that.
Yeah.
No, Johnny's on the road. Right behind us is Andy and Charlie and a bunch of detectives.
Vulcan's right before you.
Yes. No.
Lou.
No, Vulcan's right.
No, Vulcan's right in for you. Of course, it was Lou in the rest of the
world. Yes, I did. All right.
Also have benefits there for Wayne Green, who elected to enter the drop as of July 1st. And 25 years of service. That was because he bought a year and 85 days of prior credit of service from another agency to allow him to retire or go into the drop. He did elect a 25% lump sum, which is shown on the right-hand column, in the amount of $163,223.56. And he also elected for a payment for his lifetime of 100% continued to a joint annuity in the amount of $34,585.
I'll move we approve the drop benefits for Wayne Green.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Next meeting, district report. And Mr. Cole.
Thank you.
Hi, well, good afternoon. So a couple of you, this will be the first time you've seen this report, so if you have any questions, let me know as we go through. But this is a review of the June 30 quarter. Obviously, we're sitting here in mid-August. From the numbers that we're going to be reviewing here, you're probably up about 2%. I had to make a guesstimate on it right now. We don't value it daily, but I'd probably say what the market's moved. So far since the end of the quarter, you're up another couple percent. So we're getting pretty close to the actuarial assumed rate of 8% for the year. September has historically not been real kind, but hopefully we'll break the trend. Is that a good way to put it?
You kill me when you say things like that.
Yeah, I just have it. There's no real good reason for it.
I was thinking when
because
you said
our fiscal been, year end is 9/30.
We said they've been real kind, and I thought that was a... That was an understatement.
For some reason, the difference in the returns, if you had a June 30 year end versus a 9/30, and all the municipalities in Florida have a 9/30 year end, so you're not unique. It's just something about that month of September seems to always jump out and bite us when we have a good year going. No, I mean, we've had some good years, but hopefully we can hang in there.
It's what happened like 2 years ago when we had pretty much the flat year. We were up like 9% and it dumped it all in the last month and a half.
Yep. And unfortunately, that's when your actuary is doing all their valuations, doing all their accounting work and all that, you know, for funding of the plan based on that 9/30 fiscal year end. I mean, in the end, it costs what it costs and the returns are what they are, but the timing sometimes is not helpful in the work that they do and in defending defined benefit plans versus defined contribution plans. But we do have a good year going, I guess, is the point, so not to paint it with any negativity. Again, for Mindy and Steve, we're an investment consulting firm out of Orlando. I've had the pleasure of working with the board. I guess I should have thought about that. How long has it been? 15 years or more.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. It's been a good relationship, and I appreciate the confidence that the board's placed in me. We're a small firm out of Orlando, about $3.5 billion that we actually advise. Almost 80% of it's public pension work. We have some endowments and foundations throughout the Southeast, too, that we work with. So just to kind of give you an idea. We're an independent firm. We're not affiliated with any brokerage firm. So you're the only way we get paid is this board. So it's a fee-only kind of basis. So the page 2 and 3 of our report, we provide this report every quarter. Page 2 and 3 of the report are just a market summary. That's not plan specific. That's just sort of how the markets behaved here this last quarter. Page 4 starts getting into some points relative to your plan. I usually prepare a little investment summary here with some bullet points for when you don't want to stay up late reading this report. So it just kind of gives you an idea of how things went for the quarter. Starting on page 5, you'll see an investment policy review. It's on pages 5 and 6. And I'm going to go over each of the managers and how the fund did. So. But again, these are straight out of the investment policy statement. So we kind of take some of the key points out of the investment policy statement and evaluate, you know, how we're doing against those key points. And for instance, it doesn't always tell the full story. The total funds annualized 3-year return 8%. The answer to that is no. We've actually at 7.3% per year for the last 3 years. But I'm going to show you in a minute, relative to the rest of the public pension world, you've done very well. So, you know, the markets just haven't given us 8%. And 8% is, in today's, in the Florida public pension system, that's probably one of the more aggressive targets. A lot of them have dropped down to 7.75%, and some have even dropped down as low as, well, I've had a couple drop down to 7. I don't think I've got anybody below 7, but we might have somebody, but anyway.
There's been a trend. Closed plans.
True. There's been a trend to lower that. I've sort of been on an island saying I think that's an overreaction to short-term market conditions because this is supposed to be like a 30-year kind of picture or plus, you know, long-term. So I think those things get swayed by current market conditions when they really shouldn't. So that's just my opinion, but some people argue against it. So we actually did, I think at one time we raised it half, weren't we? Yeah, we did lower it down to 8 a few years ago, so.
A little fortune for a day.
Well, yeah. Arm twisted and beat up.
Arm twisted, because I said so.
And decking door for whatever his name was.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We had the, I forgot about that conference.
That's right, yeah, we had the call. It was basically, you're going to do it because I said so.
Yeah, you want your stink money or not?
Yeah, that's what it boiled down to, didn't it? That's when I backed off. I said, okay. I made a couple points and.
Because we argued, Doug Lowe's and argued it.
Yeah, good word.
He was not going to listen to anything.
Nope.
He'd have been happy if we'd have said 7% instead of 8.
Oh, yeah. And just so you kind of understand what we're sort of dealing, I might be getting a little bit too far into this, but it's hard to tell who wants to lower the assumption rate for legitimate reasons and who might want to lower the assumption rate to make the plan seem so expensive that you have to terminate it. So that's sort of where I think there's been a lot of political coming at it from the standpoint, let's lower that rate so much that the costs go up. Because when you lower the assumption rate, your short-term costs will go up.
I can name you two people right off the top of my head because they managed to ruin the general pension plan.
So, and from, you know, my position is strictly from an investment perspective. I really don't have a political agenda. We also do work for DC plans, so it's not like we just do DB plans. So, it's a good deal. But anyway, I'll go through some of the returns and show you how you rank against your peer groups too. In this report. The one section though on page 6, on the bottom section of page 6, there's several items there. It starts off with the equity portfolio, including convertibles and MLPs. All those in that section are actual, if something was marked no there, we would have to fix it right away. That would mean we're out of compliance for some reason and we'd want to get it corrected as soon as possible. So there were no compliance issues as of June 30, everything was in compliance from an investment perspective. The returns start on page 7. And I've got them listed in several different pages here, but we'll start on this one. These are net of investment management fees. So you have several investment managers managing this portfolio. All of them charge a fee. This is net of the investment management fees that they would charge. So for the quarter, for instance, the beginning market value for this quarter was $59,881,000. We had a net withdrawals of $620,000. We had a large drop, if I remember, $400,000 drop. Mm-hmm. The investment gains were $1,216,000, ending market value then $60,478,000, and then calculate that return. That return was a 2% return for the quarter. So that's not annualized, that's an actual return for the quarter of 2%. The target index, which is spelled out in the investment policy, is kind of our goal, was a little bit more than that, so we didn't quite make the benchmark for this net of fees for the quarter. Fiscal year to date then, so this is the 9 months ending June 30, since you have a 9/30 fiscal year. You can see you're up 6.1%. As I mentioned, as we sit here today, you're up another couple percent from there. So I would say we probably are at the 8% level as we sit here today. But
we're not at 9:30 yet.
And, but anyway, I'm a pretty decent year.
Maybe we should go to cash.
Well, that would be a very aggressive move, and I'm not willing to make it. Problem is, you go to cash, when do you go back? And it's pretty expensive to take a $60 million portfolio to cash. The transactions would be, cost would be rather, it'd be rather expensive, and I don't know of anybody in our business who's that good at timing markets, so, including yours truly. So, it's a long-term goal today, and that's what we've got this structure to make, hopefully to make 8% over the long term. But we know we're going to have them ups and downs. Then you have the 1, 3, and the 5-year numbers, and I'll show you some others here in a second. The asset allocation is on page 8. And by the way, when you see me look at my page, I'm one page different than you, so if I'm looking up and down, you're not on the wrong page, because I have a note page in front of mine. Page 8, the asset allocation, you can see we're a little bit, the gold is the investment policy target, or the benchmark that we spelled out in investment policy. So that's kind of the long-term goal that we think can get you to the 8%. And at this point, at the end of June 30, we were actually a little bit overweighted in domestic equities. So that's domestic stocks. We were a little bit underweighted in MLPs. I'll talk about those in a minute. Those are master limited partnerships, and they actually had a very good quarter. They've been very volatile, but they had a good quarter. going to keep that under, I'm not recommending any rebalancing, by the way, right now, I'm not, I'll tell you why in a minute, but convertibles are a hybrid instrument, they're bonds that are actually convertible into shares of common stock. So they're a unique asset class, they kind of, I call it the chicken way to play the stock market, we introduced them several years ago, it's sort of a, you know, not a fixed income alternative, but a reason for us to be able, or to lower our bond exposure. Fixed income is bonds, I don't know what the investment background is, but fixed income, we're talking about bonds. We, at the peak, probably were, a few years ago, probably at 40% or more in bonds. With this low interest rate environment, we didn't really see the potential for bonds to earn as much money and contribute much to the 8%. As it's turned out, rates have continued to go down, which means the value of the bond goes up. So it has given us more than we thought, but the goal was to lower our bond exposure a few years ago because of the low interest rate environment, but not to take the risk associated with just throwing it into stocks. So we looked at additional asset classes, and those additional asset classes are private real estate, convertibles, and the MLPs. So trying to diversify the portfolio into more asset classes to smooth the ride, with the goal of also lowering the bond exposure because we didn't think you'd get a good return. Well, convertibles have worked out very well in that regard because they have returned quite a bit more than bonds. So every dollar that went out of bonds went into convertibles has been good for the plan. Same with private real estate. I'll show you those numbers in a second. Everything that's gone really well. Private real estate is not going down and buying the 7-Eleven on the corner or whatever. It's you're in two commingled funds that invest in high quality commercial properties throughout the U.S. So they're managed by USV and American Realty. So these are two pretty large funds that buy office buildings, apartment buildings. They diversify not only geographically but by product type. So those have worked out well. MLPs have not worked out well. We don't have a big exposure there, but we recommended MLPs. These are an energy play, the American energy story. So these, you're invested primarily in pipelines and storage facilities for oil and natural gas in the U.S. So when we looked at the asset class and made the recommendation, quite frankly, the oil was quite a bit higher. But the correlation or the relationship between the pipelines and the storage facility, MLPs, and the price of the commodity was historically fairly low. And when we first looked at the asset class, that's what we were looking at, saying you're not buying the commodity, you're buying the toll road. So if they're pulling it out of the ground, you don't care if it's pulling it out of the ground at $80 a barrel and selling it at $20 a barrel, $80 a barrel, as long as it's flowing through the pipeline and going to the storage facility. That's what you were getting paid. You get paid for as an investor is the pipelines and the storage. Ever since we got in them, up until this, well, even then, the correlation has been much higher than it had been the previous 15 years. So when oil dropped, they got hit hard. And the volatility has been much higher. So it's something we didn't project. We didn't see anything historically that would tell us that would be the way, but that's the way it's been. So there's been sort of a panic selling, and then it came roaring back, and they were up over 15, almost 16% this last quarter. Yeah. So they've been a very volatile asset class. I still believe longer term, they're still going to help the portfolio, so I'm not recommending you get rid of them. Because I think the only way you abandon the asset class is if you think the American energy story is done. And I think it's in early innings. But it's going to be volatile.
How are they doing this quarter?
They're down probably about 2.
So they're fluctuating right on the price of gas.
They're kind of, well, with oil. Yeah. They are fluctuating with the price of oil, but not quite as much. Not quite as high a correlation as there was in the past.
Okay, and being that we're banking on people building pipelines and things like that, with this record surplus, do you see any?
Well, here's what
right
we,
side.
Well, here's as I said before, Mike. A lot of the decline doesn't make sense fundamentally, because even though the price of oil has dropped like it has dropped, the volumes going through the pipeline were only down about 2 or 3%, or maybe even 4% year over year. So when you look at the fundamentals of the good company, now there's some out there that were highly levered and you don't own them. You know, that's one of the reasons why you have an active man. You have a manager in Dallas, Texas called Westwood who specializes, they have a team that specializes in this and have a long-term history of managing these half limited partnerships. Fundamentally, those stocks shouldn't have gotten hit, and I still say they shouldn't have gotten hit like they did. And the good ones are still paying. High quality pipeline companies are still paying in the neighborhood of 6 to 8% dividend or payout, which is basically a dividend stream. In addition to that, while it was highly correlating with oil prices, about 70% of what's going through these pipelines is natural gas. So, again, I can't explain it. That's what, there shouldn't be that high of a correlation. So, longer term, we have a surplus right now, but longer term, that's not really projected. It doesn't take much to eliminate 1% surplus. So, we still like the asset class. I think if you'll just be patient, you'll like holding it. I'm not going to add to it because of that volatility factor. It's much more volatile than we thought it would be originally, but you're only at about 3.6% of your total portfolio allocated to it, and we think it will still be good.
This is an election year. I wouldn't do anything.
What are you hearing from them?
From the Because
here's the problem I have. When you look at this...
blew up in November for it.
When you look at this, they lost a lot more than they protected.
They did.
And then they're lagging way behind on the gain side. So is it that they're moving too slow? Are they too cautious? I mean, what
I would tell you is that, first of all, I think it's a very short-term picture that we're looking
at. And it is, because we've only had them for what, 2 years?
And the market has not been what I would, not that markets are often, I was going to say normal, but that's not the right word, predictable explainable or whatever.
Well, that's why when you say the fundamentals are there,
right?
Nothing's fundamental.
Well, the fundamentals generally get reward over the long term. In shorter term periods, and this would still be considered to me a shorter term period, you have periods where fundamentals don't matter. This has been one of those periods. So what is a little, and you picked up on a really good point, they underperformed when it went down. This is typically a manager that protects you better on the downside, at least historically when we look back at their track record when you hired them. On the downside, they do a little better, and then on the upside, they might lag a little bit. In this case, they got hammered on both sides. A lot of it had to do with general partnerships and how general partnerships perform versus limited partnerships, and that gets kind of into the weeds on the asset class, but that's where they were underweighted in GPs, and GPs were the ones that really bounced back.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm getting at was the fact that you still have, I mean, this wasn't internal manager stuff, this wasn't
internal
shakeup, this is not...
No. These guys are good at what they do. That hasn't changed. You know, 1 year's performance number is not going to change my opinion. The team's still intact. All the Westwood people are still there. They've been doing this for, what was Westwood? So I'm going to say their track record was almost 15 years, I think, in this mm-hmm. in the MLP space. They've also, that's a bigger firm, too. I don't know if you're familiar. Well, you got them in large cap value. You got them familiar. But they're about a $15 billion firm out of Dallas. They manage large cap value stocks, and then they have a team that manages the MLPs. They've been doing the MLPs for about...
Tell you what, Mike, I think Larry is having flashbacks when he was on the management side with SunTrust. I'll never forget when he told me he was going from management to consulting. He doesn't have to bring any excuse charts anymore. Is that right, Larry?
A little bit.
Flashing back to that.
A little bit. Yes, it's a 30,000 foot level now instead of the individual portfolios. But I did spend about 20 years on the investment management side of the business before I was a consultant. That's what he's referring to when I was coming out with excuse charts for underperformance as a manager. But I think the asset class, I would not abandon it. I mean, I'm tempted to nibble in, but it's just too volatile right now. It still is, so I don't want to add that volatility.
I mean, do you see it smoothing at all?
I do. I mean, even today, you've got oil at 42, 43 or so, I think, in that range today, so it's bounced back just a little bit. I think you're going to see oil settle in a $40 to $60 range. And if you see any articles on this and read them, what you'll notice is, like 2 or 3 years ago, if we were saying, what's the break-even point for drillers in Texas or in the Dakotas, it was $60 to $70 a barrel. That break-even point has dropped down to $40 a barrel for about 70% of the producers in those regions, and that's because of the technology. So the holes are already dug. They can pull it out of the ground. If oil just stabilizes, it doesn't have to stabilize at $80 a barrel. If it stabilizes between $40 and $60, I still think you're going to see a lot more return from these, because if it's coming out of the ground, it's got to go from A to B. You own A to B. And I don't see either party running for office right now that wants to to not get more independent from an energy perspective. There's nobody pushing, you know, let's import more oil from Saudi Arabia.
Don't get us in a train stop. Anything that's going to haul coal. That will be.
Well, that's the other reason why I think the pipelines, you know, they're talking about building more pipelines. And you've seen Warren Buffett was fighting that for the longest time. And then about, I get my timing off, but between 6 and 9 months ago, Buffett bought a big stake in KMI, which is one of the largest pipeline companies. I think that tells you he thinks that the future oil is going to be going from A to B, not by train. So he put a huge stake in KMI. So just stay patient with the MLPs. Just ride with me on that a little bit. I said that before and it's paid off most of the time. I didn't say it all the time. Most of that. I like the overweight and domestic equities. We're going to take care of some of that with some distributions that we've got coming up. So we will be doing some rebalancing. It'll be in the form of when Dale needs 400,000, 500,000, we're going to take it out of equities. As long as we have this overweight, we'll start pulling it out of there. So that's where we will get to, you know, take a little bit of that off the table as we need some cash. We're underweighted in international. I'm going to stay there for now. The Brexit vote caused a lot of angst out there, but in reality, I think longer term it means it doesn't mean that much. It'll cause volatility because it's unknown, but I don't think it'll be that big of a deal, quite frankly. What you will see, though, are probably some other countries starting to think about exiting, too. That'll be a contagion effect there of them exiting. But that's not necessarily all bad for economies. That's where I got a little confused when everybody got quite as upset as they did over Brexit. That doesn't mean that the demand for goods and services is down just because they're no longer part of the EU. It just makes it a little more difficult to do business in the EU. But a lot of those companies over there are selling for 7-8 times earnings that should be selling at 15 times earnings. And, I don't want to get into them now because of the volatility, but again, that's another asset class we may start nibbling in before we do that. Sometimes you got to hold your nose when you're nibbling in on that stuff. You're buying on the bad news. Let's go to page 11 now that we've beaten MLPs to death, and maybe show you some better news. The total fund return on page 11. Actually, could I back up to page 10 for the benefit of Steve and Mindy? This chart on page 10 actually goes back to, in this case, June 30th, 2012 on the far right, and shows what the asset allocation was at that point in time, and then every year since, going all to the left. And you'll notice there's more colors, I guess, is the way to put it in the chart. And that's part of what I was talking about, kind of the strategy was let's lower that bond exposure. We went from 31% to 27%. If we actually went further back, you'd see you were as high as 40% at one point in bonds. But gone down to 27%, we've added private real estate and the MLPs. That's two new asset classes. The convertibles are up slightly. And so it just kind of gives you a picture of a little more diversification, trying to control risk in the portfolio as much as, I mean, we're trying to get to that actuarial return of 8% over the long term, but we're also trying to deal with as little risk and volatility as possible. So when we add an asset class, it's typically one that's not going to be highly correlated to the others that you already own, so that it does give you some benefit, diversification benefits. If it moved exactly the same as the other asset classes, it wouldn't add anything necessarily. So that's what we're trying to do. So the returns then are on page 11. The results have been pretty steady. The total fund return for the quarter, even though we were under the benchmark a little bit, was still in the top 30% relative to, this is a universe of public pension funds across the U.S. So it's multi-billion dollar funds down to a couple million dollar funds. So it's, hold me to this, but I believe it's about 500 plans in this universe. So you've got top 30% fiscal year to date number of 6.5%. These are gross of the investment management fees. So 6.5%, that ranks in the top 28% of public pension funds around the country. Your 1 year return was just a little bit above average, even though it's only 0.6%, that's 1 year ending June 30, trailing 12 month. In the top 48%, your 3 and 5 years, what we actually have spelled out in the investment policy is kind of the benchmarks. We want to be above average there and ahead of our target index for longer periods, 3 and 5 years. In this case, we're in the top 29% for 3 years and slightly ahead of the target index, and then the top 14% then for the 5-year return. And those numbers are annualized. So that's 7.3% per year for 3 years, 7.6% per year for 5 years. And that number actually ranks, again, in the top 14% or so. Okay, so that's the total fund. And that's what we want to see. I mean, we're going to have fluctuations from year to year, but we want the longer-term numbers to be pretty steady. So your managers are started listing below there, and I'll just spend a second. Westwood is a large cap, they're a large cap value manager. They're, as I've mentioned, located in Dallas. Their quarter was 3.4%, that was in the top 36%, even though it was a little below the benchmark. 11.5% fiscal year to date, and this is comparing them against their peers, large cap value oriented equity managers, that style of stock manager around the country. So there's their rankings and their performance across the board. Sawgrass is your large cap growth manager. You're going to have very little overlap typically between what Westwood owns and what Sawgrass owns. They're looking at companies differently. Westwood's looking for companies that maybe have gotten beat up, paying a little bit higher dividend yield, maybe, you know, something of a restructuring going on, but they call those value stocks. They're looking for something that's selling cheap, but they think they've identified a catalyst for it to get better. Whereas Sawgrass is looking typically for companies that have had good earnings growth, good consistent earnings growth, and they expect they will continue to have good earnings growth. They will typically pay a little bit higher price for their stocks than Westwood would, because they're buying that consistent return stream. That's a very general description of the two differences, but you won't have a lot of overlap in those two managers. That's, again, more diversification. And then Sawgrass is being compared against a group of large cap growth managers. So they're peer group, and they've done very well, as you can see, going across the board. Done a good job for you. Frontier is a small cap manager, so they're looking for the smaller companies, typically under $5 billion in market cap. Market cap is just the stock price times the number of shares outstanding. So they're looking at smaller companies, U.S. companies, and then we compare them against their peer group. As you can see, they've done a very good job for you. They've added some good value. Hood River is a small cap growth manager. Again, very little overlap, between those two managers. They've struggled a little bit more here in the short run. You haven't had them very long, but they haven't done quite as well as Frontier, as you can see. Then we have Westwood as your MLP manager, managing a little over $2 million for you in that space. And you can see they've had a quarter of 15.8. Mike pointed out that's below the benchmark, though. Again, underweight in the GPs. Like I said, getting into the weeds a little too far there, but hang in there with them, because I think they're still one of the best out there. They have struggled this last year. Convertible is the same story in terms of struggling against their peer group. It's been a great asset class to be in, but Advent is out of New York. They specialize in convertibles. You've had them for several years now. They've struggled a little bit in the current market environment relative to their peers and their benchmark. The peer comparison is primarily due to the fact that they have a little bit less. Again, it's hard to talk about this without getting too far into it, but convertible managers can go a wide spectrum. They can buy these bonds that are very much equity sensitive. So if they're buying let's say they're buying an IBM convertible, it's a bond that's convertible into a given number of shares of IBM stock. If that stock, if the convertible is trading in a range that's in the money, as they say, then it's very equity sensitive. So if the stock market's going up, the convertible will go up quite a bit, or, you know, almost dollar for dollar. It depends on how far it's in the money. There's also convertible managers who get defensive and buy stocks and buy the bonds that are pretty far away and so that basically they'll protect you better when the market goes down. So they're a little more defensive. Advent is kind of in the middle with a leaning towards defensive. So the fact that the stock market has continued to run has hurt them relative to a lot of their peer group. Where they typically make it up is when the market goes the other way. And their convertibles won't go down nearly as much as the peer group, nor nearly as much as the stock market. The asset class as a whole, what we look to get out of it, and is over the long term, maybe about 70-75% of the upside of the stock market, but only about 50%, 50 to 60% maybe of the downside. That's why I call it the chicken way to play the stock market. Because worst case scenario, if the market just tanked, a convertible then becomes a bond. If the market shoots up, hopefully you'll get some of the, you know, 80% of the upside capture, 70-80%. That's your convertible 101 for the day. International Euro-Pacific. Euro-Pacific has an outstanding long-term track record. They're okay. They're doing okay for you here, but if we went out even longer, you'd see better numbers. But international just has not been a very pretty place to be. And their name, Euro-Pacific, they have a lot of weighting in European and Asian stocks. And probably one of the largest funds out there, if not the largest international fund. It's only at about 50 basis points, 51 basis points fee, which is about 0.5%. So it's a very inexpensive play and a good long-term track record. So we're a little underweighted relative to the benchmark there by about 3.5%. I want to keep it that way for now. The best asset category you've had is the next one in the last few years, or last 3 years anyway, has been private real estate. We added that about 4 years ago, I think. But you can see that you got two managers, but the total has been 12% per year for the last 3 years. So high, that may surprise some of you because you probably still have empty strip malls down the corner. But these are high quality Class A commercial properties for the most part and with high quality tenants. So they're paying the rent, they're getting rent increases, and property values have also gone up some. So 12% a year for the last 3 years. American Court giving 12.4. We haven't had UBS, that's why they funded a little later. They're giving you about 10.8%. They got a little longer line to get in.
Yeah, they funded us in stages also.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit here. They had a queue. These real estate funds, we don't want to go much higher than we have now because they can be very illiquid. Now these are designed to give you a quarterly liquidity, but we saw in 2008 when we had the financial crisis, you had to get in line to get your money out. So there was a delay in some cases up to over a year. And by the time, if you were in that line, by the time you got to the front of the line, you decided it was time to go
stay or buy more.
Yeah. And we did, as Lee knows, in a lot of places, and it worked out pretty well for those who did. But so that asset class has worked out well. Bonds are next. That's your fixed income. As you can see, only 3.2% for the last 5 years. Sawgrass is a little bit below average there, but the range is extremely tight, and so it's not, there just isn't much money to be made in bonds right now.
Is the consistency there, is that a result of the flexibility we gave them, or are they just not performing even with the flexibility he begged for?
You know, I haven't talked to their bond guys for a little while, but I don't know the answer right off the top of my head, so let me dig into that a little bit when I report back to you next quarter.
Because, I mean, he was the one that came to us with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're not, you know, they're right on top of their benchmark, so it doesn't wave a lot of flags to me, so I haven't dug into the next level that I would if I was concerned about a manager.
That's what, you know, I'm like, well, is this because he can make the moves that he's getting the benchmark? Or is he not getting anything but the benchmark?
Yeah, let me get an update from Burfine there. David Burfine. Might want to have him in if you want to. We haven't had him in for a while.
I'm tempted as to which one I want in.
Yeah. You want Westwood? We'll talk about MLPs next quarter?
Nah, I'm looking at the convertibles too. Convertibles aren't very impressive. I mean,
I'm probably a little more comfortable than you are with them just because I know I got my hands around why they've underperformed, because it's been a bull market for this primary for the last 5 years. And they don't do as well in the bull markets as they will when it goes the other way. So that's why I'm a little more patient. Let's have somebody else doing good, just to kind of...
No, it's interesting, I think the move towards alternative investments was brought about by projections for fixed income, right? Which aren't good. But the alternatives that most funds have gotten into, you can see it here with MLPs and so global bonds and across the board, they haven't done as well as just stayed in fixed income.
Well, that's true, and a lot of consultants use hedge funds, and we chose not to use hedge funds, and they haven't done well. We did choose MLPs, and most of our peers don't. Well, I wouldn't say most anymore. There's been a lot more use of them, but I don't think our state peers use them too much. And they, you know, out of the box, they were outstanding. And then they got blown up. But you guys never got that out of the box.
Didn't General get in some situations with them?
With
hedge funds. Didn't they have some problems
they
with
it? They do have a hedge fund, yeah.
We started, you know, we have a lot of hedge fund managers that come in, because that also is what, when I'm not out doing this, you know, they're in between the meeting cycles. We interview probably over 100 managers a year, either at their place or in our office. So we'll talk to about anybody, even if we're not too interested in what they do. They're typically very smart people. They'll come in, you spend 30 minutes with them, pay attention, you'll learn something. And I've said, probably said this, where you may learn you never want to see them again, but you'll learn something. And hedge fund managers, to me, they come in and I know these are just, but they remind me of the Indiana Jones scene where the samurai guy comes out and does a lot of this and he just shoots him. That's kind of the way I feel about hedge fund guys. They come in, they're smart as a whip, they got all these different tactics, different strategies. They talk about the leverage, they'll talk about everything under the sun, and at the end of the day, they're not really making any money, but they've made a nice hefty 20% because that's how they charge.
Really smart people can really lose a lot of your money.
Yes, that's true. And so, and hedge funds are such a broad category now too. I mean, it's originally a hedge fund would be maybe a long short fund where you could short stocks you thought might go down, and that was supposed to protect you in down markets. Well, you lever those things up and they start borrowing. I mean, it just gets extremely volatile. So we have not found any that we thought were that attractive for the most part. We've got a couple plans that have some exposure, but it's through a fund-to-funds approach. But we didn't like them. But we did, to two out of the three, I would argue a little bit against what Lee just said, just in your plan, because two out of the three have worked pretty well. Convertibles have worked well as relative to bonds. Real estate has worked extremely well relative to bonds. MLPs have not. But all three of those were asset classes that we recommended to get bond exposure down. So,
you got any preference on here you'd like to see?
I agree with Larry. I'm calling in the
MLP people.
Yeah.
When did we have them in? Was it back in November, maybe?
Was it Dustin?
No, I was
going to
say, wasn't Kim
Calhoun? Didn't
she come?
Yeah, Kim came, I won't say it was last November.
Wasn't that long ago?
And we're in the same place.
Actually, or was it February?
Yeah, she was February 8th, maybe. Yep. She was here.
Yep.
If that's the case, me personally, I'd rather have the bond people in and find out. After all that, the stuff that we went through, and all the work that Perry and everybody went through to meet their requests, I'd be curious to see if that's why they're toeing the line, or if they're still underperforming. Because I remember his words pretty clearly. It was, if you give me the ability to do this, I can do more, I can make more, I can...
Yeah, it might be interesting to hear from him, because the bond market hasn't behaved anywhere near what the way most bond managers thought it would behave.
And I don't think
and consultants do, by the way.
I don't think he's been in since we had that conversation, if I remember right. Yeah. That was like 3 years ago.
Well, that's partially because I don't need that in all the time.
But. With the bonds, I know the general board, they have their consultants in almost every meeting, and I've not seen the need in that myself. But with the bond situation right now like it is there much more they could really be doing for it? I mean, you look at what the returns are in the five-year mark, I mean, they're...
They're right on the...
They're right on it.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah. The people that have been outperforming, really the last year, you had high-yield bonds, low-quality high-yield stuff did really well. So, in this universe, unfortunately, that they are getting compared against kind of everything, but...
If it's a simple question for you that you can bring back next time, I'm for that, too.
Although I'm not opposed to having them in. They haven't been in.
They haven't been in for a while.
Couple of years.
I don't have problems.
Yeah, I mean, if it...
I think I'd like to hear from them anyway, but I'll talk to them in between, too, but it might be a good time to hear.
Or maybe Marty could come, too, and talk to us a little bit about the large cap product as well.
It's been a while since you had made it, right? Page 13 is just showing, again, showing the returns for the total fund and how they rank them for, I already kind of went over that, but you can see the range. If you're interested in some of the data behind it down below, it puts you in the first quartile and second quartile and all that stuff. Page 14. The green line on page 14 represents net contributions, so that's contributions minus the withdrawals, benefit payments, fees, etc. The blue line represents the market value of your plan, and this is going back to June of 2011, so these are quarterly plots. The difference between that green line and that blue line is investment earnings. As I said, we've been in pretty much a bull market for the last several years, and that's created some pretty good earnings. Page 15.
Hold on, back up a second before I forget. Did we have them in and create a problem? Didn't we talk with Doug Logan last meeting about doing the experience study at the November meeting? And is that going to be too much? I'm just asking. Did you jump in my mind?
We talked to Doug about doing another experience study. I don't remember that we said anything about November.
Okay, all right. I'm like, because I know that turned into a rather long process last time. Sorry.
And in November meeting, he may not be ready for that. That's soon after the end of the fiscal year.
All right.
I'm trying to get his reports to that.
Well, it would be good if we could get that experience study sooner rather than later.
That's true, too.
Because if there's any assumption changes based on that, that could be incorporated in the 16 valuation report.
What popped into my mind while you were talking about that last chart, Larry, was the number of vacancies and how it's getting harder and harder to fill them with qualified people. I mean, people keep washing, people keep going bye-bye in background and polygraph and everything else. Right now we're running 10?
Is it 10? Officially 7.
Officially?
With these three. With three retiring this year, we'll be at 10 at the end of the year.
Yeah. That gap, and then it made me think of his thing with how much up, down, sideways contributions, and all the stuff that went. And that's, I guess I got on a rabbit trail in my own mind.
Well, remember, too, we're mandated with the 10-1-16 evaluation to go to the same mortality table and assumptions that FRS has, which
is going to drop
costs. So maybe with the experience study we could have some offsets with any adjustments might come from that. I think it'd be a good idea to get that sooner rather than later.
Do you want to talk to Doug then before I invite Sawgrass?
Yeah, I'll contact him and see.
Okay. So just let me know if you want me to invite Sawgrass. I will.
That's
all right.
When he was in here giving us the valuation, he said we need to do it soon. And something popped in my mind about the November from it.
Well, I don't think you have any kind of emergency or anything where you have to have the managers in. So I'll find out from Sawgrass what's going on, dig a little deeper in their bond portfolio. I think I know the answer, but I'll verify.
And I mean, if he says the flexibility that we gave him is what's helping him meet the benchmark, I'm happy with that. You know, because we went from consistently under, and he's, this is what I need. If he's meeting it.
Yeah. Well, you can't use that as an excuse for anything anyway.
I mean, it's not like I expect them to beat it by, you know, 2.5% because it just isn't there, not in that product.
I think their duration has been, you know, their maturity, average maturity. They don't venture too much from the benchmark, so they don't make big bets there that, well, we know rates are going down, so we're going to buy long bonds. That would be a pretty aggressive strategy. They don't do that too much. They stay within about 10% range of the benchmark. So the fact that they're below their peers, I'm 90% sure, but I will verify. Like I said, for some reason, I have not talked to them for a while. I haven't seen them for a while. I've seen the equity guys, but not the, I haven't seen Burfine for probably over a year in a meeting or anything. So we'll, I do get the reports from them every quarter. I just think they buy higher quality, so I think that's part of the reason they're, you know, not able to beat the benchmark. When high yield does well, they're not going to do that great. They've held in pretty good. Page 15 is looking at the risk that the plan has relative to the return. I mean, we've talked about the returns enough here, but the only point I'd make here is if you look at standard deviation on the right-hand side, you see standard deviation. For the last 5 years, standard deviation of the fund has only been about 8.5%. Just to give you a comparison, go down that column and you'll see what the stock market gives you in terms of the last 5 years. So that's the higher that number, the more volatile the returns. So we tried to manage that risk, get it down. Your return has been 7.6 with about 8.5% standard deviation. If you go to the three-year numbers, you'll see even lower numbers for all asset categories, but your plan has actually had a pretty good return for only 5.75% standard deviation. That's a pretty low volatility number, which, again, to us and the business, basically, that tells us that some of the diversification strategies are working. The risk level is going down. We're trying to get your blue dot in that top left quadrant. That top left quadrant would represent lower volatility and higher return. If we can do that, and then the benchmark. Now your benchmark itself has a pretty low standard deviation and a good return. So even if we just matched it, but you got active managers, we'd like to beat it, and we'd like to get up in that left-hand side. We're inching that way, but we're not there yet. Well, technically, I guess we are, but we're not as far as I'd like to be up there. Page 16 are your fiscal year returns, looking back to 2005. So these are the returns as of 9/30 for each year, except for the one on the far left, which is the fiscal year to date. Again, as we sit here today, we're above 8%. So hopefully we can hang on to it. And then the last chart I'll cover with you today is on page 17. And what we are looking, we try to get, we want as consistent for returns as we can get over the long term. And this chart shows, the way you read this chart on the top left is these are rolling 5 year periods for the last 5 years. So every quarter we look back 5 years. Every quarter looking back 5 years and saying, how did the plan do? So over the last 5 years, looking back every quarter, 35% of the time the plan performed in the top quartile, top 25% relative to your peer group. 25% of the time it was in the second quartile. So a total of 60% of the time the plan ranks above average. 35% of the time it's in the third quartile. I want to see that get better. The reason it's not better is one of your managers you had there a few years ago that performed well, primarily one performed so poorly that you've gotten rid of. And then the good news is that only one of those observations was in the bottom quartile. I want to keep you out of that quartile for sure, as much as we can. So the total fund then on the bottom then, if you look at the last, we haven't had a whole lot of down market in this period, these periods, as far as the equity markets go. I would expect to see that down market capture number go a little bit lower in down markets. In other words, instead of capturing 98% of the market when it goes down for 3 years, I'd expect to see that number maybe in the 80s if we had bear markets. I am pleasantly surprised at your up market capture. It's over 100%. So when the market's up, you're capturing more than that. When the market's down, you're capturing equal to or slightly less. And then there's data on each of the individual managers, but you haven't had a lot of them for a period where the data really is too meaningful in these charts. And that's what the rest of the book is.
Hood River looks so good.
Don't get wrapped up in the short run. There's nothing going on there as far as management changes or people changes or there's nothing. There's no team changes or strategy changes there, so.
And we haven't even had in 2 years yet.
Yeah.
Just when you see that, when you're looking at numbers like that, what's a question?
Well, but even that, if you look, these are different because they haven't had them very long, but this is a one, if you go on page 21, mm-hmm. 1 year rolling periods for the last 5 years, we only had 3 years. So there's only three periods to look at. They're in the top quartile, a third of the time, second quartile, a third of the time, and the last quartile, a third of the time. So, short period. If you look at individual quarters, they're actually above average. Now they got 33% in the last one. Yeah, so they missed it a couple of quarters. Yeah, that's very long. Yeah, they look pretty crazy when we are. I don't normally go through that kind of detail. Don't want you dreading to see me every quarter.
Yeah, I was going to thank you for the educational seminar this afternoon.
I'm sorry.
I'm glad you did.
I start talking about it, and then I get, well, wait, that doesn't make sense if I don't explain it. And then the next thing you know, you're bringing it all
out. Oh, I'm glad you did. For Steve's benefit, and hopefully Mindy's appointment's going to go through. And
yeah.
For both of their benefits, that one was very informative, and I think it was probably for Jessica as well, because she's only been here for a year, so.
Well, there's a lot of history behind what you're looking at, you know, so, and,
you know, we're talking about the...
Gets caught up a little bit, yeah.
We're talking about the getting with Doug to do the experience and everything. I mean, there's some... contributions thing is going to be what the problem is. I mean, as far as we just inked a new contract, that would be a question for him when we get to him. But, I mean, there's going to be changes, and it needs to be changed, so sooner, better, later. Might be later.
All right.
Let me know when you want in the next meeting, if anybody.
Next is approval for Alicia Gaither and Jessica Cullerin to attend the FPPTA conference. I'm assuming in October.
September.
Who's presenting on that?
Are you presenting?
So I have the cost. If I go, I would like to be certified. So on the bottom is the certifications for me, which is 3 tests. There's the total one in your portion on the front right. And then Alicia's cost is at the top. Alicia's cost is for, if anybody, if you guys want to go, that's how much that would be.
So $223 and $373, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
What this is, the Florida Public Pension Trustees Association Conference, which is held twice a year, I guess.
The schools are
held twice a year. And this is different than the ones held by the Division of Retirement. But,
what is the certification?
This conference is September 26th through the 28th. Is it in Naples or Venice?
Bonita Springs.
Okay. Okay.
Estero Bank.
Okay.
Is it at the Hyatt?
Yeah. The Coconut Grove. Or
yeah. Yeah. That place is a little rancid. I actually been to a conference there. Great.
Yeah. Better than last year. Within the last year.
Bring your bug things though.
So listen, while you're talking about conference, the division too is having their conference in Orlando, November 2, 3, and 4. with the right of civil authority.
All right, well, let's deal with this. Any reservations from anybody? Or is, what, explain what the certification is that you're talking about. Because I guess I've never even heard of that.
Okay, Alicia has, FQPTA used to basically put on conferences that kind of mirrored what Division of Retirement did for a number of years. And they're an organization headquartered in Tallahassee. Almost all public pension plans in Florida are members or are affiliated with them in some way, basically as a resource and a training resource and so on. And back 8 or 10 years or so ago, maybe a little longer than that, they came up with a certification program so you could become a certified public pension trustee. And it's not just for trustees, it's also for plan administrators, accountants, attorneys, anybody who's involved in public pensions, that they could become involved in these programs and take the education classes and so on. And Alicia has been certified for at least several years, I'm not sure how many years now, at least 5 or 7 years. And she has to attend the classes to take CEU classes and so on and so forth. I think it's very, very good training. It doesn't necessarily, sometimes there's duplication of what you might see on the state conferences that are done twice a year, but a lot of times they have breakout sessions. I know this time they're planning on doing a lot of breakout sessions with multiple speakers and so on, and I think it's just worthwhile to have them both attend. Usually somebody from the fire board attends. I know they've had some where they sent their entire board to some of these conferences.
Well, but my question is, FPPTA different and or better than what day one of the state one is, which is for new trustees? And I frankly, it's a lot cheaper. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know what these.
Well, the FPPTA, it's more structured in the sense that they've got beginner sessions, intermediate, advanced, and if you want to get the certification. The generally topics covered by the division and by the PPTA, they're similar in terms of what's covered. But I think FPPTA, by virtue of having the different sessions, beginner, intermediate, advanced, probably, you know, some of the areas go in more depth than what the division does.
And probably cover some broad, they get a little broader. In terms of, there'll be investment categories and stuff covered that the state probably won't touch on.
Hey, that was the question, because I didn't.
So it's not exactly duplicative.
Steve and I talked about, you know, and I made the suggestion, just like I did. I went to the first day of, and yeah, the whole rest of the state one, when they put it on in May, or October, well, they weren't doing October then, you know, and I learned a ton of stuff from it.
The new trustee school.
Yeah, the new trustee school.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering what the comparison, because I haven't been there. I've never gone to an FPPTA.
No, I haven't either. So I mean, I can't compare the two. Other than the things that I've read about it, and I know Alicia has gone, and I think it's worthwhile to have them go. This 1500 registration, is that for the three sessions you would have to go to?
No, I believe.
Or is that for the first one? Is that because it's the first one you've been to?
I believe so, yes.
That seems a little bit steep, but
they have gotten kind of steep.
Yeah.
So that's just for this one, and then we've got to come up with two more?
I believe so. I can double check with Alicia, but I'm pretty sure that's...
What did General do this one?
General did this one.
Has the fire board met yet?
FPPTA has gotten very, it's gotten a little more expensive, but it's also gotten more structured. Is that the right word? I mean, you it used to be kind of a boondoggle. I did a lot of the, I've spoken at it for 20 years, and it used to be if you got the afternoon session to speak, you were lucky if you had five people. It was time to golf and shop or whatever, you know, so now they have a system where you're checking in, you're scanned in, scanned out, sessions, and I will tell you, even in the afternoon sessions now, you'll have 50 to 100 people. So it's pretty thorough.
And this year they're introducing more of a breakout formula type breakout sessions with the maximum, except for in the general session, but all the breakouts are going to be limited to 50 participants.
Yeah, so.
So they have multiple sessions going on simultaneously.
Since I'm new, can you give me a brief rundown of what Alicia and Jessica do for the board? So I understand.
You want me to do it or you want me to do it?
I'm not sure what your all's official titles even are because some of that has changed, but Alicia and Jessica are our benefits coordinators. They pay all of our payments. They pay all of our monthly retirement benefits. They prepare the 1099s at the end of the year for retirees. They work for all three of the boards, and the shares that you see broken out on that, it shows police at 15% and fire at like 11%, and the balance of it is for the general plan at like 73 or 74 or something like that. The costs are shared by all three boards for their salaries and their benefits and their training. And basically, their office is located on the third floor of this building now. And they both provide benefit estimates primarily for general. Do y'all do fire estimates? Okay. I do all the police estimates, but I mean, they've got the capability of doing police estimates. They provide me with, when somebody anticipates going into the drop or retiring, they provide me with their earnings statements and so on. And, I mean, Alicia's upstairs right now working on the payroll for this month that'll be payable at the end of the week. And our retirees, for your all's benefit, they do get paid on the 15th of the month rather than the first of the month. Drop retirees have their accounts credited on the first of the month, and then their investment earnings are credited on the last day of the month. And then they maintain all the information on that. They provide all the data for completion of our annual report, which has to be submitted to Tallahassee each year in March. And that's based on all of our investments, and all the managers that Larry's just gone over and summarized in his book, and monies that are paid out and things of that nature. I mean, their list of duties and responsibilities are pretty long, and I don't think I've got anything here with me.
They do basically for us what a payroll service would do for a mom and pop business, and they use the payroll tech service. They do all that, the record keeping and everything. Because we actually got we delved into this like a year ago, and it was going to be like $150,000 to have somebody that would cut checks and all that stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, with it split amongst the three boards, and technically they both work for the boards. City will disagree with that, but technically they both work for the boards, and the city is like ministerial in nature.
They're in an unenviable position of working for the city and having a supervisor with the city, but also reporting to 3-5-person boards. So they have supervision by all of the boards as well.
What was your quick on the $1,500 fee? Thought that you want that more explained, I guess? Is that what we're talking about, or?
Why is Alicia's 500, yours 1,500? Because you're getting a certification that she's already got?
Correct.
but then it's going to be another 1500 and another 1500?
I just texted her and she said that is everything and the pay, and then they pay part of that. So that is everything. That's in all three tests.
So that's all three tests?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that a certification that's good, like, not forever, but is that a long time? Is that like a one-time certification, or do you have to renew it every couple of years?
I have to continue to go back, like Alicia does.
Continuing education units.
I believe it's once a year. But it's, you would see that as a Legion's price.
I'm sure.
If it's a one-time, because it's her first time, I guess that's understandable.
So that's what they charge us to go.
I mean, ultimately, when you're looking at it, we're talking about $600. But, you know, that plays right back into the, you know, oh, look at the fees in this thing, look at the expenses. That's why I like to ask the questions about it, because everybody wants to beat you up on that.
I'll make a motion to approve the trainings for Jessica and Alicia.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Start with a couple follow-up items. We had to do it last year for the first time, and again this year, within 60 days of approval evaluation report, which we did at our last meeting, we need to post on the city website the 534 calculations, or 112.664 that Doug does. The question is that been done?
We just got it a week ago, but yes.
Yes.
Yes. We just got it a week and a half ago.
Okay. And it's posted, so.
With the hypotheticals?
Okay. Better late than ever. Yeah. Yeah. Like, how long will your money last, assuming there's no more funding coming in and pay the benefits, figure?
But he explained it very well. If you haven't seen it, his explanation of it was spot on.
And he filed electronically with the division?
Yes.
Okay, and similarly, the administrative code, just the key calculations, which I believe Larry has provided to us, has yet been posted.
Yes.
Okay. 172 compliance. Four things came to us with that legislation. One, we did at the last meeting, which was adopting a budget for the 2016-2017 fiscal year. Later this year, we'll need to do a report of expenses through the September 30, 2016 year. The ordinance incorporating the share plan has been adopted, so that's done. And the only other item for compliance is as the mutual consent, as we used to say.
No, they have not done that.
Well, we have till 17, I think, right? Our current contract expires in 17?
No, it now expires in 2019. I told them that needed, I told them exactly what you told us at the meeting, that needed to be negotiated, and there needed to be a separate MOU on it. Wayne Helby told me, not Wayne, George Hatchigan told me at the night we were voting on the contract, that Cindy Kelly said the pension board has to do that. So they did not negotiate it. So it has not been done. It's not negotiated. It's not part of this contract. And basically the FOP is telling me we have no clue what we're supposed to do. We're getting told by the city it's the pension board's job to do, and you're telling us it's our job to do. And I said it is a negotiable item. It is part of a pension negotiation, and the board cannot negotiated. I said, if you guys want to give up and sign an MOU with the city that says the board now negotiates pension, knock yourselves out. I said, but you don't. We don't. So I don't know what to do.
Well, the statute is clear. It needs to be agreed upon between the city as the sponsor and the union.
Nobody knows what needs to be written, though. That's the
problem.
Well,
it's in the field is wide open as far as mutual consent, what to do with state money. And it's all over the board. It's just, you know, it goes all the way from 100% goes to the city to fund existing benefits, to 100% going to the membership for benefit improvements, and anything in between. So they're all, it's just a matter of what is agreed upon, but it is important, two things, that you do reach a mutual consent, because if you don't, then you're kicked into the default provision of the statute, which essentially provides that 50% goes to reduce unfunded liability, and 50% goes for the benefit of the members. But if you're in the default provision, that 50% for the benefit of the membership has to go on the SharePoint. And by far and away, there's mutual consent more than not, because most folks would like to see benefits improve with the portion that would be agreed upon for the benefit of the members rather than being mandated to go into a SharePoint.
No, because when this contract got signed last year, not the extension, that was the whole thing. The benefit that the state money was providing went bye-bye. So,
yeah.
But I didn't negotiate it, can't negotiate it, so I don't know what to tell anybody because I have no clue what to write.
Well, and it doesn't have to be part of the CBA.
Advised us before, it'd be better to have it as a separate document.
We should have a separate document if mutual consent is reached, mutual consent agreement, and a significant difference between that and the CBA is the CBA has a stated expiration.
Here's the only
mutual
thing.
Mutual consent doesn't expire until when and if there's a new mutual consent.
The FOP knows nothing about it or how to write it. Nobody, I can find nobody that even understands it. I certainly don't even pretend to understand it.
Do we have any guidance on what's supposed to go in this agreement or any type of a draft?
Oh, document? I can send you numerous examples, but they're all different. And it's simply limited to the issue of use of state money. That's right. It doesn't, unlike the CBA, who has a lot of other issues, it's simply how the state money.
Well, and that's just it. I there's been so much confusion with this thing, because I know Ms. Kelly was confused on it too, by some of the questions that she brought up, and that's what I'm saying. They're telling each other, no, it's you, and we're sitting here, we don't have
time. I mentioned that the field's wide open on what you agreed to. Some have simply provided that we're going to handle the state money just as we've been handling, however that's meant.
That went by with the last contract.
Yeah.
So they have reopeners every year.
Yeah, but that would be a reopening again to put the target on percent and the stipend back
in. Inactive by next year.
When the next agreement is entered into, which I had to know was going to be next year.
Well, didn't they just
ratified
a new contract that was effective when?
Because
it
couldn't have been yet.
The vote passed. But it hasn't gone before council yet.
Well, we should be doing it now. And just tell me what the agreement is, what to do with it. We write it up in about a third of the page, and then
that means
representative of the city and the union.
Everybody's got to sit back down at the table. This will not happen quick. They say, and everybody runs and leaves, and then they come back 6 weeks later and, no, we'll do this, let us think about it, and then 6 weeks, and it ping-pongs back and forth. This was the quickest contract negotiation I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's important. This needs to be done. We've got the share plan adopted and the ordinance has been passed. We've got that covered.
They're going to need some examples.
We don't want to be thrown into default.
They're going to need some examples. If you have examples, that would be great. Because they're going to need some examples, because I can tell you the people negotiating the contract have no idea. They're asking me what wording needs to be put in there, and I don't know what to tell them.
Well,
can you provide us with a couple of examples?
I can give you several examples.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would
but
be,
the thing is, where the wording comes from is what y'all decide to do.
Yeah, no, I get that. But so somebody can look at it, because I'm explaining it to them, and are looking at me and they're going, huh? They don't know what it is, and they're getting told conflicting things, because I'm screaming at them, you got to do this, and the city's going, no, the pension board doesn't.
Okay, I'll send some examples to Dale, and hopefully that'll get things off dead center there. Again, what we really, as most, want to avoid is not doing it, and then we get kicked into the fall.
Well, I don't know how the money's being used right now. Or the majority of it.
I thought you said it was not in the last year.
No, it went away from certain people. So some of it's, I guess, still there technically.
The money?
No, the way it was being used. I guess some of it's technically still there, but if you were under 20 years or 19 years, whatever it ended up being, 19 years and 8 months or whatever, that is not in play for those people anymore, but it's in play over here.
Right. Yeah. Well, what's in play, you know, prior to this Senate Bill 172, you had 9011 legislation that essentially provided excess state money goes for benefit improvements. And then you had the Naples letter, which provided a mechanism by which the city could use some or all of that money. And this statute basically does away with both of those. This simply says you agree what you're going to do, or, as I just said, roughly 50% is going to reduce unfunded liability, or 50%.
You're forgetting the anti-Naples letter. Wait, whoa, that's not exactly what I meant when I sent that letter.
Well, yeah, that went through a lot of generation. I mean, there was Naples letter, and they were saying, well, it's only, it was a union that they negotiated, and it applied across the board, and now it's gone.
All right, I'll look for that stuff.
That's all I can do.
But yeah, we just want to be sure, and the division has sent some letters out. Well, they had a question on the annual return this year about, well, have you put your share plan provision in yet? Have you, you know, all this? That's a good question. And somebody the other day got a letter and said, if you don't do it, you're going into default. So I think they've been fairly lenient lax since this just came about last year on enforcement, but they're gearing up for it. All right, now, financial disclosures.
Okay.
This done?
Done.
Good.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've done yours.
I'm done.
All right, now, Steve?
Is that the Form 1?
It's Form 1 financial disclosure.
Yeah, I just got told about it. I went by there to pick up the form. I just got to fill it out and send it. I really get done this.
Yeah, you need to do that within 30 days.
Yep. It'll be done this week.
Taking your seat. And then each year you're on the board with everybody else by July 1st. And Ray, is he off that? Is he resigned? Is he not on the board anymore?
He resigned verbally, basically. And he has done his and the final.
He has? Okay.
It's all been done.
Good.
Don't ask him about
good.
That.
And Matt did his regular one, but he has not yet done the final. But his term only ended 2 days ago.
He's on his own.
Okay. As I said before,
I'll remind
him. The Ethics Commission has no sense of humor about the fines.
I'll remind
him. Do we know?
Mindy, when and if you come aboard, then you'll need to do a Form 1 within 30 days of when you come on board.
You did?
What
those forms are online too, so you go to the state website and actually fill them out online. It's like a PDF form you can fill out and print out at home if you want.
What website?
Fiddles. Division of State, I can't think of what I'm
saying. The Ethics.
Yeah, through the Ethics, yeah. State Ethics website.
Yeah.
Or Wesley Will Cox's office.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just walk in, fill it out at the counter, yeah. And hand it right back to him.
Yeah, it's very simple.
It's
easy.
Oh, okay.
Because you actually turn it in there, you don't mail it to the state, you turn it in the elections office because they have to certify it and stamp it.
Okay.
At one time, they had them in the clerk's office here in this building, but yeah. I don't know for certain.
Within
30
days?
Yes. And
I have to get one again.
I have proof that you filed. Yeah.
Because it was sent.
Not just in this county, but counties all over the state, they tend to do disappear, yeah.
Yeah, they always get a copy, ask them for a copy, and they stamp it and give me their own copy.
That's the best they do, yeah.
And if you go...
And you said you're waiting till November, right, from my position, or you think it'll be soon in there?
I think Roseanne tried to put it on the next council agenda.
Well, we're gonna...
You haven't been interviewed yet.
No, that's next Monday.
Okay. So as soon as you're interviewed, I presume it's gonna go on.
The following afternoon, oh, okay.
If it does happen, make sure, if you go to Wilcox's office, tell them this address, and I am the only one that can change it, because mine has been changed twice by people, where it has been sent places, not of my consent.
Okay, I got that.
That's it?
Other matters?
Last meeting, we talked about a summary plan description, and you were gonna try to get a draft for us, I didn't know if any of that had been done yet.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Okay.
Yep. I'll try to have it due before our next meeting, so I can review it and go over it. Now, is there anything that came out of negotiations that benefit of funding that would require us to do an ordinance?
No, nothing changed pension-wise. The renegotiation was the city wanted to raise base pay, and the union countered, and basically everybody got a raise, because they just wanted to bring a bunch of people up to here and not do anything for anybody here. They explained to them that dog wasn't gonna hunt, and basically we got a 3-year wage package. And then there were some give on how much vacation time people could use if they were suspended from that stuff.
Okay.
And
drug testing.
So nothing that's gonna need an amendment to our pension ordinance?
No, not right now.
Because supporting for the general, you know, they've got that arrangement with variable benefits and whatnot, and which there's gonna be a lot of discussion about that, because we've had a tax review on that, which needs to be looked at. But in any event, I heard that the city, under the variable rate, they raised the pension contribution 2%, but then they gave a 2% raise. So they kind of sounded to me like took it with one hand and took it back with the other. And Wendy's shaking her head. Yeah,
I've heard the civilians are not happy. Yeah, right. The natives are restless. I'm in the drop. It's
not good. We have some, I forwarded you that, Lee, and I forwarded it to Larry the other day.
Yes.
There's an extra, right there, extra copy there. And it was a notice of prior provider to funding survival transition data. Bank of New York tends to continue to rear their awful head here. We recently transitioned from Bank of New York as our custodian to Wells Fargo after having a couple of years of less than desirable service out of Bank of New York, and I'm being very generous in that description. But anyway, they apparently did not provide a certified cost of market values to Wells Fargo. And Wells Fargo basically provided us with this notice, and it's what they call a negative consent letter that Alicia has. I don't even have a copy of that letter, but they're basically saying the figures that they got from the consultants and the figures they got from the investment managers, that they're going to consider those to be official figures, because Bank of New York was either unwilling or unable to provide us exact figures of what the values of each of the accounts were. Okay. And we're not sure how we need to proceed.
Yeah, General has the same situation. And first of all, they should be directed otherwise. They need to get the real numbers. We have no idea. General has asked me to write, and Alicia's going to provide the contact person's name at Bank of New York, and then I'm going to basically write them, give them 30 days to get the information from Wells Fargo, or we'll file a complaint with the regulators. And we should not indemnify them against laws.
that's what Wells Fargo was wanting for us to indemnify.
Right, absolutely not.
Based on unknown numbers, whether they're correct or not.
And we don't have any basis to know any more than they do.
Does the city have the same problem with the charter switch too? Do you know?
So, should notify them, no, we're taking action, try to get the information to them.
Are you gonna provide a letter on behalf of the general plan?
Yeah.
I think this board should directly to do the same thing on behalf of our plan. Or if it could be done in a single letter.
Yeah, sure.
Because it was a piggyback type contract we had all along.
And Alicia, I'm gonna get that out as soon as I get the individual contact person from Alicia.
Yeah, because they had a wholesale change up there. Everybody we dealt with at Bank of New York is all gone now.
And basically tell them, do it in 30 days or we're gonna report it to the regulator.
If they don't do it in 30 days and you report to the regulators, what position does that put Wells Fargo in? If you're saying you're not gonna indemnify Wells Fargo and they're sitting there trying to operate with no data.
Well, where they are, they're...
No reliable data.
Yeah, they're doing it now. But it was just confused with what they're doing and...
Just curious.
Well...
Wells Fargo hasn't done anything wrong.
No.
They're trying to do it right.
Yeah.
But not indemnifying them.
Yeah.
The problem I have is they're saying this is what we want to go with as the baseline.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, but I'm just saying.
I think we should tell them, no, this is what you can go with for now.
Right.
It ain't over.
Yeah, yeah. It says right here, unless they direct we direct them otherwise, they'll base the statements on market values paid independently. So we're directing them otherwise. Just sit tight, we're kind of working out. Get more.
So we actually need to notify Wells Fargo.
Bring this, yeah. Okay. That's what it says, yeah.
You have a generalized number to work off of, but it's by no means going to be the
right.
Be-all and end-all.
And Alicia said we're not talking about an exorbitant amount of money. She does. She said probably just a few thousand dollars when all is said and done, because the comparisons have been done with what the consultants say, what the investment managers say, and it's close, but not, has not been certified. Well, same type of deal you guys have dealt with in the last...
That's right, and we have footnote in this report too, because
yeah.
Normally we work directly off of the custodian's data, that's the official record, but we knew the last, what, three quarters now, we've known that the custodian's data was inaccurate. We knew it, so we were using a manager's data. When I say manager's data, I'm really just talking about values. We have our own performance system and everything, but if Bank of New York is showing us a convertible value to 94 and the manager's showing it at 107 and we verify it's 107 is a lot more accurate. That's what we were going.
I can't believe I'm transferring this information.
It just, that's where it seems to me it's a lawsuit or a reimbursement of fees.
Well, they, I mean, it was just a few thousand the last time they screwed up. What was it, 4 or 5 years ago they screwed up and notice like we ended up getting 10 grand from them or something like that?
Well, that's right. It was a negotiated amount there. I don't remember what it was.
Correct me if I'm wrong. For us not to proceed as a breach of our fiduciary duty.
Yes.
Done deal. Yeah. Just like the lawsuit thing. Done deal.
Yeah.
Do we need a motion to do that? Or?
Just join us in the...
And we continue to cost you more.
Correspondence to Wells Fargo that we're doing with the
yeah, don't forget your fee in that too.
I never forget that.
I realize that, but I mean,
and that's not true. I don't keep protesting me. I forget it too often.
When we come to what the dollar amount's going to be, we need to tack. It needs to be with the tack on of everything that Lee's got into it too.
So we need a motion to direct you to contact Wells Fargo then. Is that
Yeah, you go ahead and join in conjunction with the general plan and correspondence to that.
I'll make that motion.
If we want them to pay within 30 days or file a complaint to the regulators.
So yeah, what he said?
Yeah, what he said. I'll second what he said.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And that's and the reason I brought that point up was the same as what Larry was doing, so, because I didn't understand that whether you like it or not, you have to do what is best for the plan.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's personally distasteful or not.
I'm just amazed back in New York, the errors they made previously, but also this. I guess it's kind of raising on the gate.
I see a lot of it. Larry and I have talked about this. I think a lot of it on its face looks like pure ineptitude. Unwillingness to cooperate, unwillingness or inability to provide us with the data that we need.
I think it's the one of that in the second, like we talked about. We're too small a fish for them to worry with anymore.
Either way, I mean, you've got a contract, they've got a liability to provide you service, and it just looked like they just said, oh, by the way, we're not going to do it. I didn't hear, we're not going to do it, here's your money back. I just heard we're not going to do it. And they blamed it on their conversion to a new computer system and new data system. And this goes back to...
I don't really fault Wells Fargo for trying to get indemnification.
No, I don't either.
We just say, no, we're not doing that.
That's their fiduciary duty.
Yeah, they're trying to do
that. No, I don't blame them for trying. Yeah.
It's kind of like we're a little bit in the same boat as Wells Fargo. Because we can't verify that, you know,
well, that's right.
What we've shown you is 100% accurate.
So how is, and how, just, is that affecting what Doug's filing with all this stuff? Or has it affected with what he just filed with?
For the drop in terms and all that.
What about what he just filed with the board for the
requirements? 100% probably. Because it's hard to say. What we do is get the information from the managers. We run everything through our system from the consultant's data. Go through our performance system and it kicks out the performance numbers for each of the managers and all that, and the total sum. We then get verification from each of the managers what they think their performance was off their own individual systems for that quarter, for your plan. We look at it. When there's a discrepancy, we go back to them and say, hey, you've got a disparity with the, or discrepancy with the custodian, resolve it, let us know what's going on. Say that to the custodian also. In this case, the custodian wasn't answering.
I guess my question is, to you, Dale, does Doug know, so he has to do anything for like when you do the yearly, he's basing those numbers on this and he's swearing that these are the true and correct. Does the division thing, you know?
He bases. Doug bases everything based on actual numbers of actual earnings and actual payouts and disbursements and assets and all that. So
we know all that stuff's right.
Yeah, we know that's correct. And that's part of what is supplied by Jessica and Alicia, is all of that information that's needed for the report.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jeff.
The last meeting, there's a training conference coming in November, and I think Dale was talking to Brian about going. Did he get back with you?
I've not heard anything back from Brian. I know he had talked about going to the spring conference and then wasn't able to go. Lee mentioned it earlier, the state conference is in Orlando. It's November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. The 2nd is a new trustee program. That's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And it's at the Radisson and Celebration on Parkway Boulevard.
What is it? 3 days, right?
Three days with the new. They haven't finalized the agenda. Normally, Lee is the speaker. I know Larry has been to these. Foster is often there. They're very, very worthwhile conferences to go to. There's no registration fee for the November one. Because this is their conference, I think the one in the spring they call it their school, and they do charge a registration.
Yeah, that one there is a registration.
There's
that's
registration.
The one they do in conjunction with Florida State.
Right.
Yes.
But this one, as of yesterday, the agenda still isn't out. So I think it would be, and if you do want to purchase conference materials, they do have them for sale. Or you can download them onto your iPad or onto a thumb drive. So rather than having printed booklets, they're trying to conserve on the cost.
Oh, they're not giving out the thumb drives anymore?
That.
When I went last year, they gave us a thumb drive that had everything, everybody's presentation on it.
This one says conference materials will be available for free by download from our website.
The thumb drive is, I think they give this.
It's, let me get it for you.
I was going to see if Steve knew about that, or if Steve wanted to go, because that's very useful for new trustees.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, I'm trying to go every, second or third year just to keep up with things, and that's where I learned.
I just went last year, so I think I just went last year, so I might wait.
Well, it's like, I learned something in the ethics portion that I hadn't put on any of my Form 1s since the beginning. I have a prepaid college program for my kids, and that is absolutely a must report, according to them. And I'm like, I didn't know that. They're like, report it next time.
My question is, since that's, I think that's before our next meeting, do we need a motion to approve funds for people to go then, or do we need to find out if they want to go first?
Well, I think we can do a motion to approve somebody to go if they're able to go. Typically, what happens, Steve, is the department will allow you the time to go.
Right.
And the board will pay your expenses to go. There was a time we used to be able to use second dollar funding to pay for it.
I've given them an action memo every time, and the chief's approved it every time.
So if you're able to go, the next one isn't it in April normally?
May.
Or May. Beginning of May after the
last year's session.
Unless they go in a special session like they did last summer.
And that's in Tallahassee, which was spring,
which really screwed things
but,
up.
Where's this one at?
No, this one's in Orlando. It's a celebration for us.
I mean, realistically, for you, this is one you can drive back and forth to. Obviously, we have to.
Yeah, I actually done that before.
I'd be interested in a November one.
I can.
Because the board pays your hotel and your meals. I mean, it's.
Now, this is an email from the Division of Retirement. I'll forward it to you and then you both.
So a contingency motion?
I would say a contingency motion. If Mindy gets appointed by then, she may be able to go then as well. And I think it's definitely worthwhile to attend.
Do you have to hear back from Brian if he wanted to go or not?
No. I'll contact him. I'm not sure why he's not here today.
I like the motion then for Steve to attend if his schedule permits.
You amend that to include Mindy coming in.
Oh, she's going to be on before then?
We think so.
I interview on Monday.
And I think it'll go on the next council.
John.
It'll go on the next council agenda after that.
Yeah, if Mindy's appointment gets approved before then, yeah.
Second. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
And the last thing I have is an information item from Alicia and Jessica. And on the city's website, the regular www.ocalafl.gov website, under city government boards and commissions, there's now a pension link that they're going to post information concerning pension, and that's open to the public. Or any board members, if you all want to take a look at that. It's just on the city's regular website.
Can you give me the address more?
It's www.ocalafl.org.
It's that same drop-down where it even used to be.
And then you can look up council members and the city administration and different departments. And then under city government, there's a drop-down tab, boards and commissions. And then there's a tab there for all boards and also general pension, police pension, and fire pension. And that's where they're downloading all this wealth of information, including agendas and other things.
Is that all you got?
That's all I've got.
I'm done.
Clinker. That's the only last question I have.
Clinker. Clinker is actively trying to avoid service from our attorneys. And our attorney has contacted the Bradford County Sheriff's Office to try to have him serve at the, he's apparently stationed at Camp Landing in the National Guard now. And the military has been extremely uncooperative with us. And the last I heard was Bradford County was trying to locate him at Camp Landing to have him serve. And the attorney told me last week, his assistant, that they've apparently located a local address on 49th Street or 49th Avenue for a relative of his, so they're trying to locate him through that.
I think it's 49th Lane, and that is probably his next way. Because that's where he used to be.
Yeah.
Just for everybody's information, I ran into him. That's how we knew he was back. At which time he knew about this. Says, it's the city screw up. It's too bad they did that, but I don't have any money. Sue me. And I said, well, give me an address so we can get you served. And he refused to do it the wrong way. But did tell me he was stationed at Camp Lane.
Well, the military was getting better about cooperating with civilians.
So well, I
thought so too, but they've not been very helpful with this.
And you guys may not remember, but years ago we had a police officer forfeited the pension and was overpaid 60-something, and we're talking about that for $60-some thousand. And we had to file a civil suit, got a judgment, put a lien on his house, and finally got the money. When the house was sold, he died.
Some minor detail at the end of the story. He died. I remember trying to get back to
9,000?
It's about a little over 8,000 plus expenses. And what happened on that, just a little bit of background, as y'all know, Clinker worked for us, and he left.
Well,
which is being very gracious.
Be part of his work.
He left, and then for whatever reason, unwisely, was rehired again about a month or 6 weeks later. And then he deployed to the military, but when he left, when he was terminated, he got a refund of his member contribution. And then when he came back to work for us, he worked for us for about 2.5 years. And was terminated again, and then when Alicia told the computer, tell me how much money he's paid in, and the computer gave her a gross amount, which included the earlier refund amount.
That he already received.
So he got refunded it a second time, and he knew full well it was too much money, but he kept it anyway. And we went to the state attorney's office and tried to prosecute him, and they said no. We had to go after him civilly.
Right.
Although technically it's a theft, getting an arrest and a conviction for it is difficult. So we've been dealing with this since it was discovered about a year or 5 months ago.
And he was deployed for a year, so you can't do anything while they're deployed.
And the suit has been filed in county court to try to recover it by Michael Cooper's office, and we have an extension on it till the end of December because he had deployed overseas, and now that he's back stateside, we're trying to get him served so we can move forward. And at least get a judgment against him. We may not get any money, but we can hopefully get a judgment against him. Somebody's got to rule.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, when he dies, we can file a claim against the estate.
Yeah.
One thing any of us would be here for. He's like 30.
Oh, no,
he's
is
not. He's older than 30.
He can't be much.
He's in his 30s.
He's in his 30s.
He's middle 30s.
He's at least mid 30s.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, most of us will be here.
Well, yeah.
You mean here locally?
Or here,
wrong. I'm just starting. I'm just starting.
Yours would be 100 at least, right?
At least.
Anything else?
That's all.
Lee?
Larry?
Mindy?
I'm good, thank you.
Jessica?
Yep.
All right. If that's the case, I'll close this meeting. Time is now straight up 3 o'clock.